Blog Talk Radio.
And at 12 o'clock, it's Talking Sports with Mike T here on a sunny September afternoon here in the New York area. I'm your host, Mike Tramatozzi, with you for the next 30 minutes. Talk about everything in the world of sports that's worth talking about. If you got any thoughts and you want to call in, let me know. 760-283-0846 is the phone number. A lot to talk about if you're a football fan. Obviously, week two of the season is 99% done as we wait on the Monday night game between the Falcons and Broncos. But let's start with the New York Giants, who finally got their first win of the year. And this was a weird game. Giants played terribly in the first half. Terrible turnovers by Eli Manning, which led to 21 Tampa Bay points. The worst one being the interception return by Eric Wright at the end of the half, literally at the end of the half, when the Giants were driving to try and get some more points before the half. But in the second half, they absolutely eviscerated Tampa Bay's defense. Eli Manning, 31 of 51 for 510 yards, two touchdowns in the second half, both in the fourth quarter, one on an 80-yard bomb to Victor Cruz and the other on a 33-yard pass to Martellus Bennett up the sideline, which was a very nice catch by Bennett, going up, grabbing it, and getting both feet in bounds. If you look at the yardage for the game, Tampa Bay really only got three big plays in the game. The 29-yard touchdown pass to Vincent Jackson, the 41-yard pass to Mike Williams, and they got another one deep also in that second half, or in the first half. But Tampa Bay, 2 for 10 on third down. They ran 52 plays. They only got 300 yards. They only ran the ball for 79 yards. The Giants, on the other hand, total yards 604. So you're thinking that they literally were 10 yards away from doubling Tampa Bay's output. And it's something that, to the fact that turnovers are the great equalizer, because this game should not have been close. 500 yards passing, almost 100 yards rushing, a great, great game by Andre Brown in relief of Ahmad Bradshaw, who hurt his neck. Hopefully, he'll be okay. Wouldn't be surprised if Bradshaw does not play on Thursday with the quick turnaround in Carolina. But, the Giants ended up getting two interceptions in the second half off Freeman. They held him to just over 50% completions. He was 15 of 28. Vincent Jackson had two big plays. He had the touchdown catch, and he had a 41-yard pass in the first quarter that set up a Tampa Bay field goal. Corey Webster didn't have a good game in the first half. I thought he played better in the second half. He had three tackles. He did have an interception, one of the two. I thought Jaron Hosley, the rookie, was fantastic at starting opposite Corey Webster. Six tackles, second on the team. Ty Phillips, who had a big game, not so much in the stat, but he had a big hit on Vincent Jackson that I think kind of woke the team up. But like I said, this game shouldn't have been close if you looked strictly at the stats. I mean, the Giants are the first team in league history to have two receivers go over 10 catches and 175 yards, and both caught touchdowns. Huge game from Akeem Nix. He destroyed Akeem Talib the whole game. Victor Cruz came alive, pretty much the whole game he was there. He had 100 yards receiving at halftime. Finished the game with 11 for 179 and a touchdown and a big, like I said, 80-yard touchdown pass that got the Giants tied. And Martellus Bennett, second on the team, five catches, 72 yards, and a touchdown. And Ramsey Barton had a big 20-yard catch on that final drive that set up, eventually, the Giants going down and scoring the winning touchdown. But I think from an offensive standpoint, you really have to look at what Andre Brown did. Coming in the second quarter, getting after Bradshaw was hurt. Bradshaw was off to a decent start, five carries, 16 yards. But Andre Brown came in, ran tough, ran physical, ran north and south, knew which hole he was going to run into regardless of whether or not it was open. He'd take his 3 yards and he'd go back to the huddle. Long of 23 on his second run, finished the day 71 yards on 13 carries and his first touchdown. Also had a two-point conversion that tied the game and contributed two catches for 19 yards, one of which got a first down. So Andre Brown coming up with almost 100 total yards, actually 90 total yards from Andre Brown. And I think this is a guy that's going to get more looks. I think this game is something that, you know, he deserves some more carries now. He deserves carries. He deserves to show that he can be a guy that you can count on. I think if Bradshaw is healthy, he's still your number one, but I think Andre Brown is certainly deserving of more carries and a chance to show that he's not just a one-week, you know, specialty. This guy, he runs hard. He doesn't seem to go down on first contact. He always seems to be getting positive yards, and I think that's something you need on this offense. And I think the offensive line, the way it was structured after David Deal got hurt with Locklear at right tackle and Will Beattie at left tackle, I think that's your best offensive line in terms of pass protection, run blocking. You know, the line, it's no coincidence, I think, and it's no slight to David Deal. I think David Deal's been a very, very good player for the Giants for his career, but I think you saw once those guys and got acclimated after that goal line play the next series, they had Beattie at left tackle and Locklear over at right tackle. They kind of got into rhythm. There were no hits on Eli Manning. He wasn't sacked. He did take a couple shots, but nothing that resulted in a sack or anything. But when you look at it, they really, the offensive line took, you know, went forward and really got going with Locklear at right tackle, and I think it was something of note that the offense running game got going with those guys in. But obviously the thing everybody wants to talk about is Tampa Bay deciding to dive at the ball when they knelt down, when the Giants went in a victory formation. And that's silly. I've never seen it, and I've never seen it work. But, you know, Greg Schiano says, oh, if you watch the tape of Rutgers, we do that all the time. Who cares? He makes it sound like he was coaching at Ohio State or Michigan or, you know, Alabama. He was coaching Rutgers. Living in the area, I watched Rutgers the whole time he was there. He was decent. Could never get to the big game. Every big game he had, he'd lose. Go ask him how it was to – did he ever try it against West Virginia? Probably not, because West Virginia was beating him up and down the field every week. Schiano needs to stop and think. You know, he's got this idea that he's this, like, great guy because he brought Rutgers from nothing. Who cares? Because Rutgers is still nothing. It's not like Rutgers – he brought Rutgers to the top of the pyramid going against LSU and Alabama in terms of consistently being there for national champions. He hasn't even won a Big East title. He never won a Big East title. And this guy's talking like, oh, I brought – you know, we did that at Rutgers, and that's just something we do. I tell my players not to – stop. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Make it sound like he coached Rutgers, like he took him and he was coaching Alabama to three national championships. Stop. Maybe if he got Rutgers to a BCS bowl once, maybe then we can talk about him really doing some sort of job to Rutgers and making them a perennial player. But he never even won the Big East. He never even came close. He got to number three in the rankings in 2006, and then he lost to Pittsburgh. Schiano needs to get off his high horse because, honestly, his job at Rutgers wasn't that good. So pretty much, I got him from terrible to mediocrity, and that, okay, congratulations. But that was ridiculous, and the Giants were right to get mad at that. He could have had someone get hurt, but luckily it doesn't seem like anybody did get hurt. But we move on to the game against Carolina. And Carolina played really, really well yesterday against the Saints, who find themselves in some trouble right now at 0-2. Obviously lost the first home game after going 8-0 last year at home. This week they go on the road to Carolina, and their defense just gets eviscerated. You know, they gave up 463 total yards. They got 490 themselves, but they gave up 200 yards rushing. This isn't at all because Jonathan Vilma is not playing. You know, they just don't have a good defense. And I think a lot of people thought, oh, Steve Spagnuolo coming in, look, he won a Super Bowl for the Giants. He's a good defensive coordinator. He can't be a good defensive coordinator if you don't have good players. They have a terrible defense. You know, they have some good players. Will Smith's obviously a very good player. Malcolm Jenkins is a good safety, as is Roman Harper. But their corners are terrible. Terrible. They can't do anything. You look at what the receivers did. Brandon LaFell, 6 for 90. Steve Smith, 3 for 104. You know, they couldn't contain Cam Newton. On the other side, Drew Brees, another game with multiple interceptions. Yeah, he was 31 of 49, so his completion percentage was better than it was last week. But even with throwing for over 300 yards, a majority of it went to Darren Sproles, 13 for 128. A lot of those are checkdowns. They're not running Sproles, you know, 15 yards downfield. That's all a lot of Darren Sproles getting a 6-yard pass and turning it into a 20-yard pass. You know, Jimmy Graham did have 7 for 71 in a touchdown, but look at everything. Marcus Colston, 3 for 49. Lance Moore, 2 for 30. You really have to give a credit. Yeah, they gave up a lot of yards, more yards than they gained, but Carolina's defense, Captain Mutterlin, Gamble, those are some decent corners, and they played well to a point that they kept Carolina in the game. And a lot of those were, a lot of these yards were after Carolina had gone up 35-20 in the fourth quarter, so New Orleans obviously had to pass. They did get a nice running game from Pierre Thomas, 9 for 110. Mark Ingram, 16 for 53 and a touchdown. Not good, not terrible. It was all right. You know, 3 yards a carry is not great in the NFL, but it's at least some signs of life from Mark Ingram after a rough rookie year last year. But the Saints have some problems here. Obviously, their defense is leaking like a sieve. You know, they can't get out of their own way defensively. This is the second week that someone has gone over 30 points against them and over 400 total yards. So you'd be worried if you were a Saints fan going into the rest of their schedule. You know, next week they go and they play the Chiefs. That should be a win at home. But then they go to Green Bay. They play the Chargers. Then they have their bye week. And after that, Tampa Bay, Denver, Philly. So the next 6 games for the and that's before they finally get to Atlanta in week 10. But if you're New Orleans, you figure you have to win at least 2. If you don't win at least 3 of these next 6 games and at least get to 3-5 and give yourself a chance to get to 500, they have to win more. I think they need to win 4 of these games and get themselves, you know, to 4-3 and get over 500. Because if they start losing to Green Bay and losing to the Chargers, you know, if they lose to Denver on the road, it becomes difficult for them to then think in a loaded NFC that they can get in at 10, you know, 9 wins. I think it's going to take 10 to 11 wins just to get in to the NFC playoffs. And that's not to mention, look at the second half of their schedule. San Francisco, the Falcons, the Giants, Tampa Bay, Dallas, Carolina. So it's a little easy, the final 3 games of the year for Carolina, for Tampa Bay, 2 of which are at home. But that's a tough 3-game stretch ahead of that. Home for the 49ers, at the Falcons, at the Giants. So an interesting start to the year for New Orleans. But if they don't clean up their defense, they're not winning anyway. You know, you can't give up 75 points in 2 games and expect to be a contender. I would expect them fully well to blow out Kansas City next week because Kansas City's defense is probably worse than the Saints. So that's something that should happen. They should get a win there. And then you go to Green Bay and, you know, hopefully them get to 500. But in terms of Giants, Panthers on Thursday, it's a tough game. I mean, maybe it's easier for Carolina because they're at home and they were home last week. So it's not really much, but they have to travel anyway. So it's, you know, the Giants are traveling to Carolina. It's not like they're traveling to Oakland or, you know, it's an hour plane ride to Carolina, hour and a half plane ride to Carolina. So it's not like the Giants are going to be The bigger question is which team can kind of get their guys healthy and what their practice week will be like, because it's really only one, maybe 2 days, maybe one day of practice with a walkthrough. Because then, if you can win this game, both teams will get the winner gets themselves a 2-1, and they feel a lot better about their season, knowing that they then get another Sunday off. If you're the Giants, that's your second Sunday off in 3 weeks. They played on Wednesday, and then they had the first Sunday off. They came back, played this Sunday. Now they play Thursday, have next Sunday off before they play Sunday night against the Eagles. So they do tend, if the Giants can win this game, it does kind of set them up to get healthy for the Eagles, which is what you want. It's almost like having a bye week, because they play Thursday, they have Sunday off, then you have a whole week of preparation, and then you play Sunday night against the Eagles. So it's an interesting way. I'm not a huge fan of these the Thursday night games, so that's just the way I feel about them. I don't think that it's good. I don't think it's good for player safety having these guys come back so quickly and have to play another game, not a preseason game, but having another actual physical game where you expect them to play a lot. But the NFL is all about making money, so it's not any surprise to me that the NFL wants to capitalize on as much football as possible. And people watch it. It's not like people don't watch it. So obviously with people watching it, they're going to continue to do it. So it's not, crazy, not surprising if you're, looking at it and saying, oh, the NFL, they have games now on Thursdays. Okay. It's not, like I said, are you surprised that the NFL is trying to make extra money? No. I just don't think it's right, but hey, can't argue with Roger Goodell. It's not like he hasn't been terrible as commissioner. I mean, the latest issue being the whole bounty thing, which happened, two weeks ago. But, moving on, because I don't want to spend the whole show blasting Roger Goodell, because we could do that at another time. There's enough evidence to support it. Some other notes. Dallas looked really bad in Seattle after looking really good in the second half against the Giants. But what no one seems to know is I think Seattle's a very underrated team. There's a lot of sneaky talk about Seattle maybe sneaking into the playoffs. And they had a bad game against Arizona in week one where they couldn't get that touchdown to get them the lead. Even if they got a third, fourth timeout from the referees, the replacement referees. But they jumped on Dallas early, got up to a 10-0 lead. Dallas scored in the second quarter on a Miles Austin touchdown. But after that, it was all Seattle. Marshawn Lynch and Anthony McCoy with touchdowns. And Steve Hauschka with two field goals. And Seattle moved to a 27-7 lead. You look at the total yards, 315 for Seattle, not great. 296 for Dallas, below what they expect from themselves. Tony Romo, 23 of 40, so a decent game, 250, but a touchdown and a pick. DeMarco Murray, they got no running game at all, 49 yards rushing on 16 carries. DeMarco Murray held in check. Like I said, Seattle's got a very good defensive line and a very good offensive line. What Steve Carroll did in Seattle is he took everything and said, I'm going to build from the trenches out. I'm going to build a very good offensive line. I'm going to build a very good defensive line. And I'm going to build the rest of the team around that. Because if I've got a good offensive line, I can protect the quarterback and I can run the ball. If I've got a good defensive line, I can stop the run and get pressure on the quarterback. And that's what he's done. And it's I think it's a very successful and it's a very solid ploy. Plus, when you have two really good safeties like Kim Chancellor, Earl Thomas, those are two guys that are two Pro Bowl caliber safeties. It really helps your defense in the back to have those two type of guys there. And then you have guys like Browner at corner. Brandon Browner, another big guy that he likes, very big guy. He had those at USC too, big guys in the defensive secondary. He wants guys that are 6 feet, can run. And that's something that, it goes back to how the Raiders always want receivers that run fast and offensive players that run fast. And if you run fast, there's probably a spot for you somewhere on the Raiders. That's fine. That's good. But I like Carroll's idea that I want a certain type of player. And in terms of his quarterback, Russell Wilson had a very good rebound after a so-so game. against the Cardinals, 15 of 20 for 150 yards, but he did throw a touchdown. Obviously, the player of the game was Marshawn Lynch, 26 carries for 122 yards and a touchdown. Full-blown beast mode for Marshawn Lynch, long of 36 yards, which set up the touchdown pass to McCoy, led the team in receiving, 5 catches, 41 yards. Not great production out of the offensive receivers for the Seahawks. Golden Tate led the team in yards after McCoy with 38 on 3 catches. Sidney Rice had 3 for 33, and Doug Baldwin caught one pass. And that was it if you were a receiver on the Seahawks. But when you're running the ball for, when you run for almost 200 yards as a team, you don't really need to throw the ball that much. So Seattle really stayed true to their game, played good defense, run the ball. They kept Dallas' defense off balance the whole game, and then they flustered Tony Romo and the Dallas offense into just 7 points, none in the second half, shut them out, outscored them 14-0 in the second half. So the Seahawks moved to 1-1 and kind of get a little more positive mojo going as they go into their, the rest of their season. They have a game next week against the Packers at home, though, which is the Monday night game next week. Seattle home for the Packers, so that's an interesting game. Then they have a couple winnable games if you think they're going to be a good team, at the Rams, at Carolina. Rams have played tough, won yesterday in a crazy game against the Redskins at home to get themselves to 1-1 when they think that they should be 2-0 as well if they're blowing the game against Detroit in week one. Then they play, then it gets tough for them. Then they play New England, San Francisco, Detroit in 3 weeks, in back-to-back weeks, week 6, 7, 8. So you'll know about Seattle going into week 9 against Minnesota if they're for real or not. Two of those games, a lot of road games that they play, which is a little bit of a disadvantage because they have such a big home field advantage. They play 5 of their first 8 games are on the road. Then they followed up with 2 home games against the Vikings and Jets, which should be winnable games going into their bye week. And then they have a pretty easy second half of their schedule, Miami, Chicago, Arizona, Buffalo, San Francisco, St. Louis. So again, if you think Seattle's going to be a good team, you'll know if they're going to be a good team before week 9. Going into week 9, you'll know about the Seattle Seahawks. You'll know about them, and you'll know whether or not they're going to be a legitimate contender for a playoff spot in the NFC West. It'll be tough to try and topple the 49ers in that division, because the 49ers are just playing so well. Won again last night against the Lions. They beat them 27-19, and really, they kind of let the Lions hang around for most of the game. It was an 8-point game, 20-12, 17-9. But when they had to make plays, the 49ers made plays. And you look at the drive they had that took up 6 minutes and 13 plays that resulted in a Vernon Davis touchdown pass from Alex Smith. And Alex Smith has played really well. I still don't think he utilizes the receivers as much as he can. He did get 6 for 67 from Crabtree, who had a very solid game. Michael Crabtree made a ton of huge plays on that specific drive in the fourth quarter that kind of iced the game away, including a 3rd-and-16 where he got 20 yards. So Michael Crabtree had a big game. The 3 for 28 from Mario Manningham. He also had 1 run for 29 yards on an end-around. So, a decent game there for Manningham. But Randy Moss, 1 catch, 14 yards. Kyle Williams didn't make a catch. So it was basically Crabtree and Vernon Davis. That's still the one aspect. I don't know what the 49ers can get out of the receivers consistently. If they can get consistency from their receivers, I think they're going to be really tough to beat because they can run the ball. But I'm interested to see if you can stop the 49ers from running the ball and strictly put it on Alex Smith's shoulders. Can he do it? I don't think it's any slight on Alex Smith because he hasn't thrown an interception this year. So he's proving to you that he can be careful with the ball and not put it in harm's way and be a guy that you can win with. But can he be a guy that if Frank Gore is running for 3 yards a carry or 2 yards a carry and they can't get their running game going, if that aspect of their offense is not there, can he be a guy that can throw the ball 45 times and throw for 400 yards if they have to. And I think that's still something we need to see. But as of right now, they're running the ball and they're doing everything they want to do offensively, and their defense is just stifling people in terms of getting any sort of consistency. You look at the Lions, 300 total yards. Matthew Stafford, 19 of 32, one touchdown and an interception, only threw for 200 yards. They got no running game. You're going to have to struggle to run for the 49ers. I actually think for the Lions, who really don't run a lot anyway, I thought Kevin Smith had actually a decent game, 16 for 53. They ran as a team 26 for 82. So that's interesting if you're the – that's good, I think. But they got nothing. They couldn't stop the 49ers on offense. They gave up 350 yards to 49ers, 4 of 11 on third down. But when they had to, a majority of those third down completions came on that final drive that they just couldn't get off the field. You know, they cut it to 20-12 with 9 minutes to go, and the 49ers go right down, take 6 minutes off the clock, and then with 3 minutes to go, throw a touchdown to Vernon Davis, which pretty much ends the game. I know they scored with Pettigrew with a minute left, and then they didn't get the onside kick, but outside of that, it's that was a bad game for the Lions. I think a tough game. They held tough, but they just couldn't get anything going offensively. Stafford was sacked twice. Calvin Johnson, from a number standpoint, was good. 8 for 94, but no touchdowns. Constantly double teamed, and a lot of times Matthew Stafford was zoning down Calvin Johnson, and only looking at Calvin Johnson. One time he missed he actually got sacked because he wasn't looking at Brandon Prettigrew, who was wide open for a first down, but didn't see him because he was trying and looking too much to Calvin Johnson. I think sometimes you get enamored with Calvin Johnson and how good he is. But at some point, you have to, as you're Matthew Stafford, move your sight lines and look at different receivers, because they did have some wide open guys. So, but it's gonna be tough going on the road to face a team like the 49ers, especially a team that is as good as the 49ers are, and I think they're only gonna continue and probably win that division. And you look at their next three games, at the Vikings, at the Jets, home Buffalo, before they play the Giants at home on October 14th in a rematch of the NFC title game. So I don't know where the losses are going to come for the 49ers here. Maybe they lose to the Jets. I don't know. Maybe they lose to the Vikings. I doubt it. This is a team that may be undefeated going into Week 6 against the Giants. I actually would bet some money on them being undefeated going into that game against the Giants, because I just don't see the next three games being losses for the 49ers given the way that they play. So we are unfortunately out of time. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. If I didn't mention your team this week, I'm sorry. We'll go in depth next week again as Week 3 of the NFL gets reviewed, and then you look forward to Week 4. It's a cycle with the NFL, but I'd like to thank everybody for listening. I hope everybody has a great week, and we'll see everybody back here next Monday at 12 o'clock.